Welcome to We Make Children's Books, the podcast that takes you through the imaginative minds of children's book authors and artists. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and in today's episode, with us is Australia's newest children's book author, Elizabeth Hart. She's here to talk about her flagship book, Before the Fairy Ball, a beautiful story for young readers. Elizabeth, thanks for joining us. This is exciting.
Thanks for having me. This is my first actual promo for the book, so I'm super excited.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked a bit before we went on the air about you know, your inspiration behind the book. Do you want to kind of give for our viewers and our listeners kind of a background of how you created Before the Fairy Ball?
So yeah, like I said, disclaimer for all the hardworking writers out there, because if you hate me, I'll understand. basically, this book, I'm gonna tagline when I make my website, it's Elizabeth Hart, the unlikely children's author, because it wasn't my goal. Like, this book is basically like an act of love from me to my children, because it started off as a story, a bedtime story. And I've jokingly written elsewhere that it was, the girls love having stories read to them. And I have four children. I have like a 9-year-old and triplet 7-year-olds. So my time and my effort towards the end of the day when they want a story read is just non-existent. So the times that they get stories is more not than actually happening, right? So I was like, okay, they want a story. It's been a while. If I pick a book, they're gonna know if I don't finish it. So I'll just tell them a story, and that way I can end it when I want to, and it'd be like, oh, ta-da, the end. Okay, finished. I convinced myself that it would be the faster option. So I started telling the story, and of course I made the characters my girls. It was Sarah and Sophia, and their characters, their characteristics, their personalities became their personalities. And it was, oh, they like fairies, so bam, they're fairies. Eventually I got tired of telling the story on that one night, and it wasn't really at a finishing point. So I kind of like made a chapter ending and said, okay, we'll finish it tomorrow. That ended up happening like 6 nights in a row. I was like, this was supposed to be faster. It was clearly just not faster. But that's okay. It ended up being a full story. And I had been taking notes as I went along. So I remembered when I went back the next time, because it wasn't even like one night in between stories. It was potentially like a week. So I had to have the notes. Knew exactly what I had told them last time, because God help me, they would call me up on it if something wasn't right. So I had, at the end, I had this beautiful set of notes that documented the entire story arc. And I'd actually ended up having a good story, like from finish or start to finish. It was, had the full character development. It had, you know, the events, it had the challenges, it had the character, the conflict resolution. It had all these things, right? And I was like, okay, well, why don't I at least take these, turn it into like a document or a manuscript or whatever, and then the girls can have it, because it's them, basically, in fantasy form. It was all inspired by them. It was all them, basically. So I was doing that, and then Christmas was coming up, and I happened to have a very talented friend, Karen Gruber, if you want to look her up. I think she's at Karen Gruber Art on Instagram and Facebook. And she does a lot of watercolor work, and some of her favorite stuff to do is the fantasy. So even while I was telling this story to the girls, I had her artwork in my head. So I was like, oh, Karen, would you mind if I send you a picture of the girls' faces? Can I commission proper artwork from you, like an actual watercolor for the girls for Christmas? So she ended up doing that for me. Like, that's Sophia. So she took Sophia's face and actually made her into a fairy. She took her favorite colors into account and her personality a bit, because she hasn't met them. And that's Sarah. So like, that was the inspiration for the actual artwork of the book, right? I already knew her style. I love her work. I own a few of her pieces. She's amazing. And I know that she likes the fantasy and the storytelling. So I was like, oh, Karen, I was just thinking, if I wanted to actually make this into a book, like, we're self-publishing, we're not going through anyone else, it's going to be print on demand. I was like, so if worst comes worse, I pay for all this stuff, I'm out of pocket, but I have this amazing gift to give the children. Would you consider doing a book with me? Like the story's pretty much like I need to edit it, but the story's been written.
Right.
We know what we're expecting. We know, you know, we've already done the storyboarding and all that kind of stuff. So it was, she just got really excited. So she was keen. So now we're plugging away and doing it. And I was like, well, all right, now that we've decided to do this properly, other people might like it, because the reason that this became so important is because Sarah is on the spectrum and Sophia suffers from pretty intense social anxiety in general. Like if she doesn't get something right, it's more than just a talk myself down and get over it kind of thing. She writes a letter wrong and she just judges herself so hard. So I was like, look, these characters had taken on those aspects. And I was like, isn't it nice when you can see the personality traits of someone on the spectrum in the story, or someone functioning with anxiety in a story, without it being the core trait of that character? Like one of my biggest problems is with the surgeon who has autism.
Yeah, the good doctor,
I don't watch it, right?
yeah.
And it's those types of things where it's like, if they didn't tell you that he had autism, people with autism would still identify with him, but it wouldn't be the selling point for the character. It's like, he's not special because he has autism. He is special, period. And he has amazing skills. And while, like, even knowing that he has autism, most people still don't really understand what that means for people overcoming challenges on a daily basis. So they think they do, and they go, oh, he's autistic, so it's okay. It's like, that doesn't mean that that's what he wants to be known for, or what he wants to identify with more than anything else, right? So this is the same thing, where it's other kids may be able to identify with these feelings and the situations that I've put forward in the book, and how my girls have reacted to them and emotionally how they're feeling as with them as people, rather than, oh, here's an autistic fairy. It's no, this is Sarah. And this is what she does all the time. And this is her personality. And this is how she is. And she does amazing things. And that's good enough, you know?
I have a daughter named Elizabeth who loves fairies. She wanted to ask you questions, but it's past her bedtime, so we pre-recorded some questions. So what I'll do is I'll pull up the question and I'll let you answer it. She has three questions for you, and I'll pull up the first one, and then I'll let you answer, and we'll go through. Okay, here we go.
My name is Elizabeth Smith, and I have three questions for you. My first question is, what are the fairies' names?
She's adorable. Elizabeth have to stick together, fielding the easy interview questions. So it's Sarah and Sophia, obviously because of my daughters. I think in the original story, when I was just telling it, I had called them Seraphia and Sofaba, because that's what I do, right? But when we went to go edit the story, I thought that, A, because of the reading level we were aiming for, that might make it a bit difficult. And then everybody knows a Sarah and a Sophia nowadays. So I was like, this makes it just that little bit more relatable to the children reading it and the parents who are buying it and that kind of stuff. So yeah, it started off ridiculously fantasy-ish and then kind of just streamlined it into something that everyone can identify with.
Okay, and well, here's her second question for you.
My second question is, what do the fairies do?
All right. So I'm going to assume that it means in the book rather than just in general existentially. What the fairies do? What is a fairy? So in the book, it's called Before the Fairy Ball because it focuses more on this book really is like me and my children's whole life story. It focuses more on the planning process of the fairy ball. So two fairies are tasked with helping to arrange a fairy ball. So they have to arrange the food and the music and the decoration. And during that journey, they meet the gnome, they visit the gnome kingdom, and they visit the dwarven kingdom, and they visit the human realm. So they pick from those races what they're best known for. So they're like, oh, well, if I need someone who knows food, let's go visit the dwarves. They know how to cook, you know? And the gnomes do the music, and the humans are great with art and decoration. So they visit and they overcome challenges during those things and those visits. And then they get to come home and help actually be part of the fairy ball.
Wow, okay. All right, here's Elizabeth's last question for you.
My third question is where do the fairies live?
Ooh, that's a good question. I've been working on I haven't come up with a name. Like, technically, it's got the human realm in it. It could be here. Like, this could exist with us. I haven't given where they live a name or anything like that. I know that it's a fully formed world and it's got all the different races. Like I said, it's very Tolkien-esque. You've got the elves and you've got the dwarves and you've got the gnomes and all of those things. Like I said, if I do, I told a story for my son, John, as well. And he's in his story, he's a gnome. Well, he's a human and then a gnome. Trust me, it's there. So like it's all even all these stories are taking part in the same world. Like they're all connected. It's just there's no name for it. It just exists.
So it does lead into some of the other some questions that I wanted to ask you about is that, informing that, the children's book. So when you're telling these stories and then you decided, hey, this is going to be a good this the I got something here. Were you doing any like research on like how to format a children's book or how to do this or did it kind of just fall into place for you?
I did a fair bit of research, regard well, I mean, like I've seen a lot of kids' books and I knew what I wanted it to look like and I knew which books I liked the feel of as a parent who had to read them to someone else. So there was a lot of just comfort with what I had experienced already. So I was like, all right, if that's what I'm aiming for, those were my favorites. Let's, do the 8x8 books and the formatting. Luckily, Karen is quite good with the digital art as well, and she has done books in the past with other people, so I have that wealth of knowledge. So I was like, look, this is what I want to do. Is it possible? And then we're going through Ingram Spark to do the print on demand, self-published. Like I had thought about using the publishers because it's like then someone can hold my hand and walk me through it, and I'm like, I don't think I want to do that because A, that is a massive money sink. And it was just that, look, they give you the formatting details, they give you the recommendations. You can do the research yourself, you can figure out what does and doesn't work or what you do and don't like the look of. There's no, in especially in today's, day and age, there's no information that you can't find if you look for it. So I'm sure there might be some issues later. There might be something that pops up where like, oh shoot, I didn't even know I needed to do that. But it was just, I did, and it helps too with my small business. I do some editing and formatting for a small publisher, for someone who assists other self-publishers, I should say. So there was a bit of the stuff where I had already kind of picked up the ins and outs of what I needed to focus on. So like I've already got the ISBNs and I've already got the barcodes and all that kind of stuff to make it as easy as possible moving forward. And I just did it all myself. I did all the applications and all that kind of stuff online.
Wow. And did you to have like a certain like lesson or theme to this book? And
Anytime I tell them a story, I try to, like, I'm obviously being their mom, I'm very aware of where they need encouragement and where they need to just learn to trust themselves. Like I said, for Sophie, her anxiety, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful kid. And well, A, my mini me, so bonus. But she's so hard on herself. Like I said, her handwriting is beautiful and tidy, and it's the same. Like my handwriting isn't that good. Her handwriting's better already. But if she writes one letter wrong, the whole thing's rubbish. I just hate it. Or she goes to art class, which she loves, and then it's, oh, well, my painting was wrong, so my whole day was horrible because that one thing didn't work out. So with her, it was, let's tell a story where she incur encounter something that doesn't go her way,
Hmm.
or where she has to get up in front of a group of people, where she has to do those things and it works out, or where she can lean on her sister or her family or her friends to get through these kinds of things. So she sees, even in the imaginative storylines, that these things happen to everyone and it's okay. So, and then with Sarah being on the spectrum, she's very, I'll say mildly on the spectrum, because I don't, that's just the best way to describe it. She's got a general delay and a bit of emotional regulation stuff. And ultimately, though, she is just a joyful person. Like, she is, until she's not happy, she is just, it's okay. I can do everything. It's fine. I'm fantastic. It's perfect. And it's the most adorable thing ever. But then that plays off of Sophie's anxiety, because Sophie looks at her and goes, well, if she's doing it right, then I must be doing it wrong.
Right.
But with Sarah as well, it's the, oh, well, I'm good at this. No, I can't do that. And she just won't try. So it's like, look, there's those things where you're just like, let's do a story where it's not the end of the world if something isn't perfect.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're at.
Do you have any other characters, either like secondary or tertiary characters in there that are the mail carrier or like the teacher? Do you have any other inspired folks that are in the background?
Based on anyone, not really. I mean, there's the fairy queen, which I guess is, the mother figure bossing the little fairies around. So I guess that could be me. No one else. It was really just their story. Like, everything was based around them and what they were trying to accomplish and how they were trying to help everyone and how they dealt with the struggles and the events. So, like I said, we have the other stories where Jono the gnome is, he's a human boy who doesn't have a family, and he makes a wish upon a star one time, and then when he wakes up, he's a gnome and he has grandparents and a family, and he gets to do all these stuff. And like, there's a story arc there where he gets to find a family, and like, through that one, like, I might as well say it because who knows when the book's gonna be all right. Like, with that one, he finds out in the end that like the grandparents didn't have any family either. So they had wished upon a star as well to have family. So they had both made this wish and then had pulled them together. And then obviously Jono's afraid that when he goes to sleep, he's going to wake up and it's all going to be a dream. And then you get to hope for the happy ending, that kind of stuff. And that comes a bit from John's. John is also on the spectrum. We can see a trend with my children. He has trouble not making friends, but recognizing friendships. Like, he has friends, but he doesn't logically understand that the emotional pull of a friendship.
Right.
So it's a bit, this was just that call for him where he's like, I just want to feel like I belong with someone. And yeah, so that's where that one came from as well. So it's very just based on the stuff that my children deal with every day.
Right.
And you think you, like, my children are not special in this. Like, there are children dealing with these kinds of issues everywhere. So if my children get something out of it, surely someone else's will as well.
When you're working with Karen on the books, is there, talk about, looking at what the audience is? Do we you making sure that for sensory issues, you making sure the book isn't too bright or not enough, or any of those talks about the design
I
side
haven't
of it?
gone, but since it is watercolor based, the look of it becomes much softer. Like I said, we were more focused on the language and the comprehension, and because it's not just a book for children with issues, it's a book for all children where they can just identify with certain aspects of it. So it's just a book, and I'm hoping though that it sends a good message of belonging to everyone.
And do you have plans for, because you already said you already got any idea for a second book. Is there a series? Are you looking at based off of other,
I
like
will.
your eldest
I'm
or?
so surprised this one's happening. Like I said, Jono's story, or John's story, I can't call him Jono in real life. It's a very Australian thing. John's story, I would love to do as well. So I will, essentially. Whether or not I tweak that story to involve some recurring characters or something like that, we'll see how it goes in the artistic process, because it could be its own standalone thing. And that's a different, like, just because they exist in the same world doesn't mean that it has to be a joined story. So we'll see, because I don't like, as being an author and having that, like, I have the utmost respect for people who write as a job or full time or passionately, even, where it's just the stories they create in their heads and the worlds they create and the thought process that they put into planning things so far in advance. Oh, some of them, I suppose. It's impressive. And I don't know how many books I'm going to make. I don't know how many stories I've got in me. I don't know how long I'm going to do this. Is this going to be something where I make what I'm making for my kids and put them out into the world for everyone else? Or does it become something where it's like, oh, well, if people really enjoy it, then yes, I can make more of an effort to make a like a series or a more, defined world for it. We'll have to see how it goes, because it's right now for me, it's just the most important thing is getting this book done, and probably in John's as well, and just getting these messages out.
So I wanted, okay, now just blue sky, a couple of questions for you here. Now, do you, because I'm reading this, and I'm just really excited to get my hands on this book now. Do you, is there, as as both of us, used to be children and now we're adults. So I don't like to make a lot of presumptions here, but I'm just gonna make a presumption.
Being adults is probably the biggest stretch of
Do you, is there, so you said, you're pretty keyed into making the second book for your son. Is
that.
there, is will there be as your daughters grow older, is there any ideas of, all right, we got another story here? Is there something where, like, readers can kind of follow along and see what happens next to the fairies in a few years?
I would hope so, because I hope that my relationship with my daughters is always as supportive, and I won't, it's challenging. Like, all of these issues become real life challenges, right? Like, in a book, it's very glossed over and it's like, oh, it's all nice and fluffy. But I hope that our relationship is always me finding ways to encourage them. And from that, I would imagine that there will always be more stories available. Like, there's always going to be more experiences and more challenges. And, how do they deal with high school and making friends? And how do they deal with choosing what they want to do for the rest of their lives and the pressure they put on themselves for that kind of stuff? Like, there's always more stories available. Like, the inspiration just comes from real life. So as long as that's there, there's stories.
Right. And would you change, like, the genre of books as they get older to kind of coincide, like, oh, was having, like, young adult little graphic novel books, and then turn it into, like, sit down reading books? Or
I was actually just thinking, I was like, I wonder, because this becomes based on my writing skill at that point. I'm not a bad writer, don't get me wrong. I've always been comfortable writing. It was just never my passion. I was never like, oh, I really want to write a book. That's what I want. I was like, that sounds exhausting. No. So as you get into the older reading and the more involved, like, actual text-based books, it might be something that I have to collaborate with someone with if I want
Right.
that to happen, but there's no reason it couldn't, and kind of grow with the girls. But I do love the idea of doing, like, a graphic novel as opposed to just a sit-down book, because then you can still, like, we can change the artwork a bit, make it a bit more edgy, make it a bit more adult looking. Everything can grow with them, because, like I said, so much of these characters is just based on them as people. The colors and the looks and the faces and the personalities. Like, if we kept with that, then it would have to adjust as they got older as well. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen sooner than I realize, but hopefully I've got a little while.
So this is exciting then, Elizabeth. This that I'm really excited about this book. I know my daughter's really excited to get her hands on this book. And as I say, your friend Karen does amazing artwork on this,
She is so talented.
And it matches, as you said, the storyline with the art is always always needs to have like a pretty solid match. So,
well, this was one of those things where it was there. If I didn't know her and her artwork, this book would not be happening. Like, her artwork and her style is the reason I could see it being a book. Otherwise, like, if I had to source another artist and hope for the best, it would be like, no, then I'll just write the story and tell it to the girls and that'll be it. The reason it's a book is because she is so talented and has that perfect image of what I wanted to see. So,
well, this is great. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for coming on the show. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.